bikinis, sick waves, some SPF 35, and a murder most foul. We got all that here and the NYC sunshine thanks to Sheryl Crow. Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to Decomposition Podcast, where we hyper-analyze all of your favorite terrible songs. My name is Brad, and with me, of course, is my co-host, Katie. Katie, how are you doing today?
I am confused by your introduction.
Sure.
But also impressed by your Shakespeare allusion.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Great, thank you.
So, strong start.
Yeah. So, the confusion will be cleared up.
I'm pretty sure.
As we get through the... No, I'm just using, like, random words. Now. I'm just blurting out words and hoping that it turns into something. Ooh, I can hear the ice jingling in your iced coffee.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Or not sorry.
You're not really sorry. You're going to hear my jingling now.
And you're sipping.
You get to hear all those things. So we are back from Canada.
Yay!
This is our first time recording since we've gotten back from our neighbor to the north, Canada, and the wonderful cities of Montreal and Quebec City. Katie, what were your thoughts on Jazz Fest this year?
I thought we saw some really good stuff, and I have a particular favorite from Jazz Fest, and
right?
You have a particular favorite from Jazz
Fest.
They
are not the same favorite.
That's what I was going to say.
It's like I'm in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
The ladies really blew it up this year at Jazz Fest.
Yeah, I felt like every act that we watched was spearheaded by women.
The front person
was a
woman in most of the acts.
And they were incredible.
Yeah. So great job, Montreal. Another successful Jazz Fest. I got a sunburn while up in Canada.
You did. And now you have a literal redneck.
Now I have a literal redneck. These are like heretofore unseen levels of waspiness, is that I could go to Canada and get a sunburn.
Well,
it's pretty impressive.
There was a heat wave.
There was a heat wave going on the entire time we were up there.
Yeah.
Quebec City was no cooler than Montreal was.
No, but we did get caught in a squall.
We did get caught in a squall, like our first night just walking to dinner. It was like a 5-minute just like downpour, windstorm. It was crazy.
It was.
Quebec City, I thought, though not literally cooler, was cooler.
I loved Montreal more.
I think part of it is Quebec was a new place for us. And I was very, very excited to go to this new city that's very walkable and just kind of explore everything.
Yeah, agreed.
That was up there. But now we're back. Now we're back in the wilds of New Jersey, in the shadows of New York City.
I want to say who my favorite act was.
Oh, please, go right ahead.
Montreal Jazz Fest. Elise LeGros.
They were great.
Was awesome. She was amazing.
So
her band was amazing.
They have an album out that they were promoting called Playing Chess, where they play all the hits off of Chess records from, you know, back in the day, contemporaries of Motown, you know, and that stuff was really good.
Her voice was just perfect.
She has an excellent
it.
Voice. She has a very good band. My personal favorite was a band from Houston, Texas, and I know that they're from Houston, Texas, because they said there were two things they wanted the crowd to remember. One is that their name was The Suffers, and two was that they were from Houston, Texas.
And so they would prompt the crowd to, like, shout that back to them. They'd be like, "Who are we?" And the crowd would shout, "The Suffers! Where are we from? Austin, Texas!
Houston, Texas!
Houston, Texas!"
Katie, you didn't remember the city they were from, although I just said it multiple times.
It was a failure. I don't know.
And not only that, but the front woman of The Suffers shouted that at us multiple times.
Yeah, I was reenacting it right here, right now, and got it wrong.
I would pay to see both of those bands if they came to this area.
Absolutely.
So
we also saw that cool surf rock band on one of the side stages. I don't know how they would pronounce their name. I guess Tek-Tek. It was T-E-K-E-T-E-K-E.
Yeah, they were fun.
So much fun.
That was in the smaller stage, but the crowd was into it.
Yeah, and you said, and I agreed, that you felt like you were in a Quentin Tarantino movie.
I did kind of feel like I was in a Quentin Tarantino movie.
It was,
like that scene in Kill Bill, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they should appear on a Quentin Tarantino soundtrack at some point in the future.
So, Quentin Tarantino, when you hear this episode...
Inevitably.
Check out Tek-Tek.
Teek-Teek?
We're not sure. And use them. They were great.
One band that we only kind of like grazed the outside of the crowd on our way to go get a drink was that Afro-Colombian band that was just like destroying it. And like, I wish we had checked out their
yes,
their set somehow. Like, we were on the other side of the festival checking out another band at the time,
which was a band that was just fine. And then yeah, we decided, oh, we've had enough of Jazz Fest, let's go get a drink,
right?
And we walked by the end of this incredible Afro-Colombian band just killing it.
Yeah, I've never heard Afro-Colombian music. I've heard Afro-Cuban music.
Yeah, but last year we saw an Afro-Cuban jazz band, which was also cool.
Yeah, they were fun. And not really my thing, but it's fun to see live, you know? Mm-hmm. But the Afro-Colombian band, the 2 minutes of their performance that we saw, they were just wailing. They were going insane, and it was great. And I need to look up who that band was, because I would love to see like more of it.
Yeah, we'd have to go back to the schedule and find their name and figure it out from there.
So Jazz Fest was a success.
Year two.
What was your favorite part of Quebec City? The food?
Food, probably. The restaurant that you and I went to that we just kind of like stumbled into.
Yeah.
The wine bar.
Ooh, right.
Its name is like Lemoyne something, and it means the monk.
I have a picture of it somewhere. Yeah. My favorite place to go in Quebec City was the place Sacrilege, right on St. Jean. That place was so cool.
It was like a great bar. Just had a nice atmosphere and
went
good
there
beers.
Yeah.
Good little like back garden area. Mm-hmm. Very cool.
The entire place was there was something just like completely captivating, whether it was like old Quebec or down closer to, I forget the name of that main thoroughfare.
Saint-Laurent,
thank you. Was it Saint-Laurent? No, Saint-Laurent's in Montreal, in old Montreal. Oh, I can't remember. It's where the Dirty Balls restaurant was.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's also a street in Quebec City, Saint-Laurent, and that's where the Dirty Balls restaurant is.
The Dirty Balls restaurant.
And that is what the name is. So, the name is in French, but it means like the dirty kids or...
Les Suissons something or other. Yeah, it's like a slang term for dirty balls. Excellent. If you're thinking about going up to Canada, I highly recommend both of those cities.
Yeah, just such a fun time.
So, So today we've decided that we want to talk about a summer song.
Yeah, we want to get straight up summery.
Straight up summery. It is the 2002 hit song by Sheryl Crow off of the album Come On, Come On. It is, of course, Soak Up the Sun, a very poppy version, or a very poppy song in Sheryl Crow's catalog there.
Right.
This song went to number one on the Adult Top 40, number five on Adult Contemporary, number 15 on the Mainstream Top 40, and the remix of this went to number one on Dance Club Songs.
I didn't even know there was a remix.
Evidently,
to this.
It was a smash hit. The album is certified platinum. The album was dedicated to her ex, Owen Wilson, and according to the liner notes of the album, is an account of their relationship. I don't know where Steve McQueen falls into that, but that is a much better song off of this album as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it is.
Somehow, some way, that is an account of her relationship with Owen Wilson.
Well, there is a you in this song that kind of appears out of nowhere. Like there's no you subject, and then all of a sudden there is. So maybe this will clear up some of my questions.
Maybe. So this song was co-written by her long-time co-writer, Jeff Trott, who worked with her on several of her hit songs, several of her albums. I believe she was part of the original Tuesday Night Music Club. And this was her biggest hit since All I Want to Do.
Really?
Yeah, which is what, of course, launched her into superstardom.
Wow.
I have several problems with this song that are ultimately one big problem.
Okay.
With that, can I ask you to read the first chorus? Because there are slight variants on the pre-chorus.
Chorus one, and then it's labeled chorus two.
Right, but it's really like a pre-chorus.
Okay.
It's a difference in the pre-chorus, so I guess we'll just read those as they come up, and then we'll just read the chorus now.
Yeah.
Does that sound okay?
It sounds fine, because when the chorus is initially introduced in the song, there is no pre-chorus.
Yeah, so would you like to read that?
Sure, why not?
Okay.
I'm going to soak up the sun, going to tell everyone to lighten up. I'm going to tell them that. I've got no one to blame for every time I feel lame. I'm looking up. I'm going to soak up the sun. I'm going to soak up the sun.
So, let me tell you what the inspiration to this song is, according to co-writer Jeff Trott.
This song has an inspiration?
In a way. It's flimsy.
Okay.
It's a flimsy inspiration, but an inspiration nonetheless. So, this song came to Trott... Oh, that's a terrible last name to not say. with his first name, Jeff. The idea for the song came when he was on a cross-country trip from Portland, Oregon, to New York City. He says, quote, "I'm thinking this is really ironic that I'm leaving Portland being soaked in rain, and I'm actually going to New York to soak up the sun." So that's what inspired this song, and then it turned into this, like, pop candy drivel. It is drivel.
It is.
I think that's ultimately the big problem with the song.
I feel like tonally,
yeah,
it's very similar to Every Day is a Winding Road.
Sure.
I feel like the message of the two songs, and even there are some parallels for me between the first chorus of this song and Every Day is,
yeah,
not the first chorus, excuse me, the first verse of this song and of Every Day is a Winding Road. But where Every Day is a Winding Road is a great song, and even like in its randomness, it's great. This falls totally flat for me.
Yeah, exactly. This song feels like it was written quickly to pop out a pop hit.
A summer hit, like hammer out another
hit single for Sheryl Crow. This song got licensed everywhere and was in like several commercials.
I'm sure
and things
it has
like
to
that.
Be in like a sunscreen commercial.
It was in a credit card commercial and I think like a Best Buy commercial was the other big thing. But Every Day is a Winding Road has like well-written randomness.
Yeah.
You know, that's the difference. Like, I think that I wrote down that like word choice is really what it comes down to.
Absolutely.
It's poorly written because of word choice.
One of the things that strikes me about this song is that there's very little pattern even to the way that it's constructed.
Yeah.
Like very little pattern to, and I mean the way it's constructed lyrically.
Okay.
So there's not a lot of pattern to the rhyme. There's not a lot of cleverness behind the lack of a pattern either.
Yeah, yeah,
it's not like there is a bit of a discernible pattern that gets broken for emphasis here and there. It just kind of feels random, rushed.
Sure. Let's talk about the words to the chorus here.
Let me just acknowledge that in the chorus there is a bit of a pattern. So I guess I should have saved my comment for the verses.
Yeah, I mean, this feels like the type of song that was written around a chorus.
Yeah.
Jeff Trott said, okay, Soak Up the Sun is a title I want to use. Let's build a quick, catchy, singable chorus, and then we'll construct everything else around that, which is a fine way to write a song.
Sure.
No criticism about that. I just think that that's likely how this song was written.
And maybe it's why in some places there feels like there's not much connection between verse and chorus.
Yeah. I'm going to soak up the sun, going to tell everyone to lighten up. Okay, Sheryl Crow.
Go for it.
You just let everybody know they just got to mellow out, bro. Like, this is very Jeff Spicoli, but not Jeff Trott.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got no one to blame for every time I feel lame. I'm looking up.
What does that have to do with the first part of the chorus?
Yeah.
Those two ideas feel completely disconnected from one another.
Right. And I feel like the verses, when we get into those, have nothing to do with this chorus.
Yeah, I think there are some loose connections to
Very
be made.
Loose, very loose.
Maybe between the end of verse one and the beginning of the chorus, but maybe the problem is that the song is lacking a clear thematic message.
Yeah, every time we take sips of this iced coffee, I just heard my own ice jingling around. So I'm just going to own it. I'm just
going
to leave it
jingle.
In. I'm just going to own the jingle jangle of a nice iced coffee in the middle of July.
Like, I think the theme of the song is kind of, I want to accept my life for what it is. There are elements of my life that aren't perfect, but I'm going to work on enjoying it anyway.
Sure.
And you see that kind of throughout the song, but then there are deviations and variations that just don't really fit with that. And then the I've got no one to blame for every time I feel lame.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fine.
Let me tell you the other songs that Jeff Trott co-wrote with Sheryl Crow.
Okay.
Just the hit songs. I'm just going to stick to the hit songs. If It Makes You Happy, Every Day is a Winding Road. Oh, which I wrote Every Day is a Winding Road. Way to go me. Way to spell. My Favorite Mistake, which is evidently a song about her relationship with Eric Clapton. And A Change Would Do You Good. And I like all of those other songs.
Yeah.
So I know that they can do better.
In fact, two of those songs are on my list of Sheryl Crow favorites.
Yeah.
Every Day is a Winding Road and If It Makes You Happy.
Yeah.
Because I want to say flat out, I'm a Sheryl Crow fan. Like, I like a lot of her music.
Yeah, I think I'm more of a Sheryl Crow fan than I knew I was.
Yeah.
Her version of First Cut is the Deepest is excellent.
It's beautiful.
It's an excellent song. I mean, I love the Rod Stewart version also, but I think I enjoy the Sheryl Crow version more than the Rod Stewart version.
Yeah.
I know, blasphemy, right?
I think it's fine. I don't care.
That's fine. No one really cares.
I don't care.
I hate her version of Sweet Child of Mine.
Yeah, that I don't care for.
That is a garbage version of that song.
I liked her version of Hallelujah that we listened to today, but not as much as Jeff Buckley.
Yeah, she did a pretty good version of that. It's hard to do that song poorly, unless you're Leonard Cohen.
Oh, poor Leonard Cohen.
So, can I read the first verse?
Yeah, let's go for it. This is the one that I have a lot of questions about.
It took you a lot of time to just like write down your thoughts on verse one.
And I came up with...
And there are three.
With nothing.
Yeah. My friend the communist holds meetings in his RV. I can't afford his gas, so I'm stuck here watching TV. I don't have digital. I don't have diddly squat. It's not having what you want. It's wanting what you've got. So when I say word choice, the first thing I want to bring up is the phrase diddly squat.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. That's not even... It's not a good rhyme. Now, you can use terrible words to make a good rhyme, but they did neither of those things.
Yeah, I think, in fact, when I was talking about rhyme before, I kind of misunderstood my own note.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you write notes and you forget exactly what you meant.
Sure.
I guess I didn't mean that there was no pattern of rhyme.
Uh-huh.
I meant that the pattern of rhyme here is forced. And so the word choice... is random.
Yeah.
Like the word choice seems to come from just the desire to rhyme rather than the desire to make meaning.
Yeah. Likewise, RV and TV, while I have no problem with those words, that's a bad rhyme.
Sure.
And well,
Also, did you use diddly squat just so that it would rhyme with the...
What you've got?
I imagine you'd come up with this line first, right?
Yeah.
It's not having what you want. It's wanting what you've got. Because that actually is not a bad
line. I like
line.
That phrase.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that actually has some legitimate meaning to it.
Right.
Could even be inspirational to some.
Right.
But then if you work backwards from there and all you come up with is diddly squat as the best rhyme for you've got, I don't like it anymore.
When
I
you
don't
say
care
it's,
for it. It feels forced.
When you say it's inspirational... How would you?
I said to some.
I was going to say, how would you feel if you saw that like tattooed on somebody's like upper pectoral?
Does it have the diddly squat part in?
Because
I could imagine
going
to like Home Goods.
Marshall's has this on like a cardboard cutout of this.
Yeah, on like a pillow or one of those like. Mm. You know, canvases that have like a flower in the background and a quote on it.
Oh,
I could see one of those saying, it's not having what you've got. No, it's not having what you want. It's wanting what you've got.
Yeah.
Which is why I say inspirational to some. I mean, it's not for me necessarily.
I wonder if that phrase came like from somewhere else.
From
and they just
a
kinda,
home goods.
Yeah,
like
from a
she
home goods.
Saw it on a pillow there.
Or a garage sale.
Yeah.
Somebody had like just cross-stitched that onto it.
It
yeah.
seems like it could be embroidered onto a pillow or something.
Uh-huh.
For sure.
Tell me, what is the point of the first part of this verse?
This is what I have 2 pages of notes on.
Wow, okay.
Because I have no idea.
Right.
So it starts with, my friend the communist holds meetings in his RV. I can't afford his gas.
Right.
Which is a very specific word choice.
Yes.
So I'm stuck here watching TV.
Right.
And I'm like, what does this mean?
Yeah.
What is she going for here with this communist business?
Like, right.
What's going on with the communist friend? Why can't she afford what is specifically his gas?
Like, right. Are you buying his gas for him? Does he expect you to pay for his gasoline?
But she can't get to his RV, so it feels like he's selling her...
Communism?
Gas?
What?
Like,
interesting.
I couldn't figure it out. So I looked up communism. I was like, let's start there.
Let's see if there's
like,
something
I've
I'm missing.
Some
in that. Yeah.
Definitions of communism, you know, leading to a society in which all property is publicly owned and each person works and is paid according to their abilities and needs. I mean, that's the Marxist definition.
Sure.
Which I'm familiar with already. Or Merriam-Webster says that in communism, quote, goods are owned in common and available to all as needed. Well, that doesn't solve any of my questions about the gas situation.
No, not one bit.
If her friend is a communist, then shouldn't, through their friendship, they all have all the gas they need to get where they need to go?
Or conversely, what if her friend, the communist, meeting with other communists in his RV, all have to pay an equal share of gasoline in order to use his recreational vehicle for these meetings, of which they are all a part?
And so I actually had a similar thought.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, well, we're talking about gas here specifically. Are gas prices higher in communist countries? And or like, can I figure out how prices are set in communist countries? So then I read, it didn't get me anywhere, but I'll tell you what I did anyway.
Sure.
I read an article by Henry Hazlitt.
Okay.
Who died in like 1993, but he was an economic journalist. And in 1983, he wrote an article called Market Prices Versus Communist Commands, trying to explain the difference between the free market and communism and how they're interrelated. It was quite complicated.
Sure.
And so I won't go into all of it. But basically, his explanation of how pricing was set in the USSR was that pricing was controlled by bureaucrats imposing a single overall production plan from the top. So maybe her friend, the communist, is setting the pricing, and the pricing is too high.
Yeah.
And so she can't afford to pay into it. So now she can't go to a communist meeting.
Sure.
She has to stay home because she don't have diddly squat.
She don't have diddly squat.
But really, I felt like I came up with pretty unsatisfactory answers.
I mean, she doesn't even have digital TV.
Yeah.
So
I did look up the price of gas.
Okay.
In
2002?
In 2002. And I went with California because A, we're soaking up the sun, but B, California tends to have like the higher gas prices in the country. And gas in 2002 in California was an average of $1.61 a gallon.
That's not bad, that's relatively not bad. Speaking.
It actually was less than 2001 and less than 2003. So,
yeah.
I mean, maybe the speaker in this song really needed to sort herself out.
Maybe.
Gas wasn't that expensive.
Do you think that having what she wants is like, well, all I've got is this... You looked up California, but I'm sticking by New York City.
Right. Well, I didn't know that part
at the time. What she wants is the sun. And so she's like, you know what? All I want to do is have some fun and soak up the sun.
You're bringing two of her songs together.
Exactly. This is a continuation of Billy's Good Beer Buzz early in the morning story.
Maybe.
People in suits washing their cars on their lunch break. So
I really hate this verse.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And I'll tell you what, if this verse were crammed somewhere in the middle of the song, like maybe if they reversed verse one and verse two, I would think almost nothing of it. But because this is the opening of your song, this is what's intended to catch the listener's ear and keep them on this ride for the next 3 minutes, I think it's like instantly cringeworthy.
Yeah.
These seem like train lyrics.
I feel like it's trying to cash in on what was done in Every Day is a Winding Road, but doing it less successfully. Because do you know what the beginning to Every Day is a Winding Road is?
I used to work as a limousine repairman.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. Three or four of the words you said were right, but ultimately it was not correct. I like that, though. I used to work as a limousine repairman.
Is there a repairman somewhere in that song?
The end of that first line is the phrase repairman.
Okay.
I hitched a ride.
Were those the only two words I got? Okay. I used to work somewhere in that song?
No, not in those lines. So here's what it actually says. I hitched a ride.
Okay.
With a vending machine repairman.
Okay.
He said he's been down this road more than twice. He was high on intellectualism. I've never been there, but the brochure looks nice.
That is a much better constructed phrase.
Yeah.
Verse.
And that's only the first half of the first verse.
It's random. It's kind of nonsense, but it tells like, oh, how was your day today, Cheryl? Well, let me tell you about my day. Here's what I did. Like, this is garbage nonsense.
Right. I feel like there's a similarity between trying to hook the listener in with, I hitched a ride with a vending machine repairman,
yeah,
and trying to hook the listener with, my friend the communist holds meetings in his RV. Like, there's something about that that is similar.
Yeah.
But as the story continues, one pays off and one doesn't pay off. Like in this song, in Soak Up the Sun, the communist friend just disappears after that. But in Every Day is a Winding Road, that's what the story becomes about. Like, he says, jump in, and then it carries on from there. And that idea of he says, jump in, comes back in later verses too.
Right.
So it's a clever hook that pays off in one, and then it's a potentially clever hook that fails.
You know what
soaks up that sun?
The story of Every Day is a Winding Road is her hitching a ride with this vending machine repairman,
mm-hmm,
and just like kind of absorbing nuggets of wisdom from him.
Yes.
As they go on this, I'm assuming, short ride together.
Yeah. On a journey that is both a literal winding road and, yeah, a metaphorical winding road.
Right.
And it works.
Which is why that's not nearly as, like, trite and just, like, drivelly as this song.
Yeah. Oh, I was holding that up as a good example.
Yeah, no. And I am agreeing with you 100,000%. I don't have digital. With that, because we're gonna learn more about this drivel, if you would be so kind as to read verse 2.
Okay. I've got a crummy job. It don't pay near enough to buy the things it takes to win me some of your love. Every time I turn around, I'm looking up, you're looking down. Maybe something's wrong with you that makes you act the way you do.
Right. So, she must be directing these thoughts at two different yous, is what I think.
Okay.
Because in the verse, I feel like she wants to win some of your love. Is that the implication?
I think it's the same you.
You think it's the same you?
Absolutely.
Both times? But then she's saying, there's something wrong with you that makes you act the way you do. I think they're two separate yous.
I think it's somebody struggling with being rejected and,
yeah,
not being good enough for the person that they want to love them.
Right.
So the first part is kind of down on herself, right? I don't have enough to buy what it would take to win your love.
Yeah.
And the second part is critical of that same person. Like, oh, because I don't have a lot of money to buy you stuff, you're looking down on me.
Yeah.
And then maybe trying to reject that person. You know, oh, you're rejecting me because I can't win your love. Well, I'll reject you. Maybe there's something wrong with you that makes you act the way you do. I think it's the same person.
All right. I'll buy into your theory.
But where did this you come from?
Is that her friend, the communist, or somebody at the communist meeting?
Or are these two things totally unrelated?
They are unrelated. The only link between them is the fact that she's poor. Which brings me to my second problem with this song.
Okay.
I do not believe you, Sheryl Crow. I do not believe you one bit. All I Want to Do came out in 1994. So in those 8 years, she had a cadre of hits.
An explosion, yeah, of success, yes.
Big hit songs, even though they were not as successful as this one.
Mm-hmm.
Sheryl Crow was doing just fine.
Right.
You know, she was high profile. She's super hot. Like, she's still super hot to this day.
And do you know how old she is?
She's in her 50s
she's
now.
She's 56 years,
yeah,
old.
At this point, she was over 40, and she had, like, posed in Stuff magazine, which is, like, off-brand Maxim, to prove that women over 40 could still be sexy.
Right. I didn't even realize that she didn't really blow up as a success until she was in her early 30s.
Yeah. At that point, she had already had a career as a music teacher.
Mm-hmm.
She had a lot of accolades as a child.
Like, big album, though, came out in 1993. She was 31, yeah, years old.
So let's see. While studying at Kennett High School, wherever that is, Missouri, Kennett, Missouri, okay, Crow was a majorette and an all-state track athlete, meddling in the 75-meter low hurdles. She joined the Pep Club, the National Honor Society, National FFA organization.
We all care about her high school successes.
And was crowned Paper Doll Queen in a celebrity judged beauty contest. So Like Sheryl Crow.
I mean, could have retired at 17. Could have retired. What are we saying here? Like, we could list my high school accolades.
It's
as
not
well.
A competition, Katie. It's not a competition between you and Sheryl Crow. Sheryl Crow, I'm sorry. I'm spoken for. I apologize. I didn't mean to break your heart. But Katie, you need to tone down the hormones, all right?
Whoa. Whoa.
She's going to overtake Sarah Bareilles as your arch nemesis.
No, I love Sheryl Crow. I didn't understand what point we were trying to make with Sheryl Crow.
I was just talking about how...
high school accolades.
Yeah. Yeah. She was evidently hot in high school, too. I don't know. I just got into a reading tear. I can read, Katie.
Good job.
Is that why we're
good
together?
Good reading. That's why we're together. I needed a man who could read Wikipedia.
Can I tell a little anecdote about my reading?
Yes.
My mom was telling me this story a year or two ago, how like when I was in first grade, my first grade teacher had called my mom and she was so upset. She said, Brad is one of the best readers in the class and we just took this test and he only got a 50% on it and I'm so worried about his reading. I thought he was so much better than this. And my mom didn't know why. And like while she was on the phone, my teacher like flipped it over and said, oh, he didn't do the backside of the test. So evidently, the work that I did do on that test, I got perfect.
Yeah.
So, but I think that's pretty exemplary of my academic...
And that's why I married you.
That's why you married me. Brad, did you look at the backside of that sheet of paper? This book doesn't make any sense. So, yeah.
Back to Sheryl Crow.
What were we talking about?
So, what we've learned here today is that although Sheryl Crow didn't become commercially successful until 1993 when she was in her early 30s.
That's
she,
why I was reading her
she
Wikipedia
was
page.
Super active in high school and even was in all-state track.
Right.
You go, girl. And Brad got a 50% that was really 100% on a test he took in reading in the first grade.
So, I got a basically 100% on a test one
Brad
time.
Brad knows how to turn failing a test into acing a test.
So she had her bachelor's degree in music composition, performance, and education. Because she was a music teacher who then got into like singing jingles, I think, is how she broke into the business. Then was jamming with the Tuesday Night Music Club, and they put together this album of songs they had written together.
Okay.
That was the point I was trying to make when I read all of her high school accolades.
Cool. I don't know who the Tuesday Night Music Club is.
It's the band that she played with while writing these songs. In fact, that was the name of her first album, was because of these guys.
I didn't know that.
Ha
ha! There are so many things I don't know.
So, yeah. So, that's my story about whatever I was telling a story about.
Cool.
Can I tell you who the guest background vocals on this song were?
Yes.
Somebody that makes sense. Liz Phair.
Oh, cool.
So, she sang the background vocals. Jeff Trott was trying to produce Beach Boys style harmonies on this song.
In this song?
Seriously. I loved the Beach Boys growing up. And to this day, I think harmony-wise, they're top three in my book. You know, they were complex, they were rich, and so well done. And all five of them harmonizing together, it blended seamlessly. Anybody who listens to like "Don't Worry, Baby," or even like their surfing hits, like you can hear those rich harmonies. This has almost none.
Right. I mean, Liz Phair is a great singer.
Yeah.
Sheryl Crow is a great singer.
Right.
But I wouldn't say that there's anything complex in the vocals
no,
for this song.
No, not at all. Nothing complex in the vocals or the music or the thought
lyrics
behind the song.
Or anything about it. Totally lacks complexity. And honestly, it's not even that fun to listen to.
No, it's not. It's an earworm and it gets trapped in my brain because it's been playing in my head for the past 3 days.
Yeah.
But you want to hear who the other guest singers on this album were?
Sure.
It's quite a list. Emmylou Harris, Don Henley, Lenny Kravitz, Stevie Nicks, Natalie Maines, and of course everybody's favorite singer, Gwyneth Paltrow.
Hey, Gwyneth Paltrow has that song
with
Huey
Lewis
and
I
like
their
it.
Version of Cruisin', from the movie Duets. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I'm just
taking
saying,
a
yeah.
dig at Paltrow.
She's taking
for
a
no
dig
reason.
At Paltrow, the Goop Queen herself. So
gross.
The song also appeared on in another unsurprising move, Kids Bop, 2003.
This is the first song that you've told me was on Kids Bop that that's actually sense. Appropriate yeah. for Kids Bop.
Makes sense to be on a yeah. Kids Bop. In fact, we didn't need the original. If this went straight to Kids Bop, I would have less of a problem with this song.
Just change communist to something else, not yeah. because it's bad. Well, it's bad lyrically, but not because it's bad for kids, but just because it doesn't make any sense for kids.
Right.
And then the song is a perfect Kids Bop song.
Yep. 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 I've got a crummy job. It don't pay near enough to buy the things it takes to win me some of your love. Can I just read the bridge in verse 3?
Yes. Of course.
I'm going to work my way through the second pre-chorus. So, I'm going to soak up the sun while it's still free. I'm going to soak up the sun before it goes out on me. I don't remember this part happening at all in the song.
No, I can't think of how it sounds. And we listened to the song today, yeah. but I can't think of the melody of that yeah. part at all. And it's weirdly bleak.
I'm not going to re-listen to the song to find out what that bridge sounds like.
You are going to re-listen to the song many, many times, boy. Brad, because you're going to edit that song into this episode. And you're going to listen to it so many times. And you know who's not going to listen to it? Me.
You know what? You're going to listen to this episode. And then that chorus is just going to be trapped in there.
And maybe then I'll know how this bridge goes.
No, I don't think you'll remember how this bridge goes.
It's not Sheryl Crow's fault.
I should read. That's true. I should read verse 3 as well.
Well, hold on. Should we talk
about... Do you want to talk about that? I was just going to hammer out these last couple of lyrics and then talk about it.
I don't care.
Okay. So then, yeah, I'm going to do what I want.
Cool.
Don't have no master suite. I'm still the king of me. You have a fancy ride, but baby, I'm the one who has the key. Every time I turn around, I'm looking up, you're looking down. Maybe something's wrong with you that makes you act the way you do. Maybe I am crazy too. All right, Katie, you had thoughts that I interrupted.
I just think the bridge has this bummer yeah. tone that doesn't really fit with the rest of the song. It doesn't yep. fit with the music. It doesn't fit with the way that the choruses and the other, well, and all of the verses sort of, what is the word I'm looking for?
Flow.
Default. How okay. they kind of default to optimism, even though there are like a couple of pessimistic things in there, they'll come back around to something optimistic. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I'm going to soak up the sun while it's still free before it goes out on me.
Yeah.
It's very bleak.
Yeah. There is an annotation on Genius.
Okay, because you think about the symbolism of the sun as like a beacon of light and hope.
This is good.
That is a bummer.
Katie, can I read the annotation on genius.com?
Sure.
This stanza continues Sheryl Crow's critique of neoliberal consumerism, which feels weird to type. Commodification of everything is one of the tenets of modern capitalism. And the idea that someone will eventually charge for enjoying sunlight is dystopian and a natural conclusion to this idea. Even better, which that should not be on genius.com, I just want to say objectively, even better is the metaphor of the sun representing the light slash electricity in an apartment, which obviously is meant to reiterate her poverty.
Obviously. Please say obviously.
Everything gets cut off. Why wouldn't the sun be the same way?
So is this supposed to bring us back to the communist?
You know, I want to applaud the person that has spent more time thinking about this goddamn song than we have.
But this song is not about a criticism of neoliberal consumerism. I know that the word communist is in the first line of the song, okay? And maybe if the song's lyrics beyond that point were different, we could make some kind of communist versus capitalist argument.
Yeah.
Which I tried to do in some ways. Like, yeah. I tried to look into it, but really came up dry. But I'm not going to force it on this song.
No. And I'll tell you why. Because at no other point in any other song that Sheryl Crow has ever written, I'll say, because I've heard all of them, I have not, or in any interview I've seen, or in her work with Kid Rock, does she ever discuss anything about communism, neoliberal consumerism or any other like political ideology.
No.
It's absurd to think that this easily digestible 3 minutes of drivelly tripe is making a point about anything.
Right.
All right.
Other than being the soundtrack to someone like riding in a Jeep with the top off in
exactly.
a bikini.
With your surfboard strapped to the roof. Yeah. With that, I need to get into a new segment I want to introduce on our show. Segments now, Katie.
Oh, wow.
We now have segments. I shouldn't pluralize that. This is one thing. And I'm going to call it What the Fact. All right.
Oh, can we call it What the Actual Fact?
Yeah. Yes. What the Actual Fact. So this song was originally about the Columbine shootings.
What?
Yeah.
No.
I want to
wait
read
a second.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know why I asked you to wait.
Okay.
Carry on.
All right. I have a quote here from co-writer Jeff Trott, who's discussing when they sat down to write this song after he had been on that plane flight where he wanted to soak up the New York City sunshine. We were talking about Columbine, and we're like, okay, I've got my 45 so I can rock on. Like, I can blast you guys.
Oh my God.
I'm going to blast all the people that are bugging me. That's just kind of where we are at. And then we just said that's a little too over the top.
Oh my God.
The last bit of this song, the outro of this song.
I know.
I'm going to soak up the sun, got my 45 on so I can rock on.
I want you to see that in my notes,
yeah,
it says in all capital letters and it's underlined, I hate the outro.
Yeah.
I previously hated it for its absolute lameness.
Yeah.
Like, I've got on my 45 sunscreen.
Yeah.
And so, like, I can rock on, man. That's so lame that it's cringy, and I hated it. But now that I know the bizarre origin of that line, I hate it even more. And repurposing that line for the song Soak Up the Sun and, like, recontextualizing it to make it work here is just weird and maybe, like, a bad decision.
Yeah.
I what the actual fact?
I wish that I had in my intro said SPF 45 so that I could match the outro of the song with Got My 45 On.
I was surprised in your intro that you didn't say 45.
Yeah.
But also didn't want to start the episode by correcting you.
Well, I appreciate that. You're a sweet lady.
Thanks.
And that, Katie, is fact up.
Apologize for the insane laugh noise I just made.
Don't apologize. You're great just the way you are.
I don't like that.
Nobody likes that.
I don't like
Not a single person on this planet likes that.
Wow. Wow. So, I feel like anything else I have to say about verse 3 or the final chorus or whatever, like, doesn't matter.
It's eclipsed by all that, but I still want to hear it.
I just said that maybe verse 3, like, sort of brings the other two verses of the song together. Because on one hand, it continues the story of, you know, the relationship with this you who doesn't think she's good enough because she doesn't have enough stuff. But it also brings in the idea of, like, just being cool with who you are and being in control with, or excuse me, being in control of her own life. Like, she's the king, she's got the key, so, or he's the king, he's got the key, so the speaker doesn't, like, need this person who doesn't want them.
All right, so let me tell you my thoughts on this last bit.
Okay.
So
it sucks.
It sucks. If you were to put it succinctly, yes, it sucks. Now, she tags it with, maybe I am crazy too, as if to say, like, well, maybe we're all crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, all of us are crazy and we just need to accept that every single one of us is a crazy person. And that's cool, bro. But unrelated to that, don't have no master suite. I'm still the king of me. Sheryl Crow, in no country on this planet, would be crowned king.
It could be Jeff Trott's perspective. Like, we don't know whether the speaker is male or female.
She is the speaker. She was elected the speaker in this song. As the person who performs this song and records this song.
Or at least you're saying the speaker is female.
Right.
Because it's being communicated through a female voice.
Yeah.
Okay. Why do you have to be so heteronormative?
Touche.
Touche. I don't know. No, you're probably right.
If Jeff Trott were covering this song that he co-wrote, I would accept I'm Still the King of Me.
Maybe I should say, why do you have to be so gender normative?
Whatever. Just say one of those. pick your favorite, Katie.
Why do you have to be so heterogender normative?
Oh, boy. Why do you have to be so...
Fancy-pantsy.
Fancy-pantsy. Wordly normative. But also...
Don't have no master suite. I'm still the king of me is an awful line.
That is an awful line. It is an awful line. Don't have no master suite. I'm still the king of me. It's like they could have spent 20, 25 more seconds writing like two more lines in between there. And suite is not a difficult, Suite is not a difficult word to rhyme with something else. Suite and me, that hurts me.
Yeah.
That hurts me.
Is that a girl world situation?
Yeah, it's up there. It's not common like girl and world, but it's up there. But again, we have two lines that I think are good. You have a fancy ride, baby, but I'm the one who has the key.
Yeah.
I think that works in songdom so much better than almost every other line in this song.
Right. The end of verse 3 and the end of verse 1 remind us that Sheryl Crow and Jeff Trott are good songwriters.
Yeah.
But
yes.
Did not put a lot of care and attention into this particular song.
Exactly.
I assume.
The potential is there.
Sure.
And if this weren't so poorly written, it could have been a good catchy pop song.
Because the music is fun. I mean, it's not complicated. It's right. Simple, but a simple catchy song can be great.
Yeah. And that's the exact same way I feel about Train. That's why I'm saying this could have been a Train song. Because I feel like with Train, I feel like the lyrics take away from the music so much that's what's preventing them from being good songs.
Yes.
That's my problem with Train. And this song should have been sold to them. Maybe we'll see Train cover it on an upcoming album.
Yeah, so, maybe.
This song did get a Grammy nomination for Best Female Pop Vocal.
Okay.
Best Female Pop Vocal Performance, excuse me. Yeah, I could see that. It's
a pop
song and
she's
a good
voice.
Singer. So Steve McQueen won a Grammy. I forget what for.
Steve McQueen is also a fun song, but it's light years better than this one.
Light years better than this one. So Leaving Las Vegas is another song that's light years better than this one.
Well, I made a list of my favorite
Sheryl
Crow songs.
Go for it. Lay it on us.
Every Day is a Winding Road, Strong Enough, Leaving Las Vegas, First Cut is the Deepest, which I know is a cover, All I Want to Do, and If It Makes You Happy.
Okay.
Strong Enough is a little like off track with what I would normally enjoy. Like, I cannot believe I like a song with the line, Are You Strong Enough to Be My Man? It's a little cringy,
but you're on board. I'm on board.
I love that song.
You're on board with a lot of pop songs that ideologically disagree with what you would say. So that's fine.
I mean, I don't ideologically disagree with that. I don't think there's anything wrong with that message, but it's a little more like sentimental.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Than like the typical tone that I enjoy. But I love that song. I don't care. No apologies.
So nothing to say about the video?
No, I don't care.
Yeah,
we watched it today. I don't remember it
at all. It's on a beach.
Yeah. There's people in bathing suits makes sense with the title of the song.
Exactly. So any further thoughts on Sheryl Crow and
I don't like this song. It's a disappointment.
So grade it.
See.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For any particular reasons, aside from the ones that we've just talked about for the past 54 minutes?
If it were an assignment would probably like meet expectations.
Okay. Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
There's nothing in it that should be a D or an F. It's not a failing. Like the piece is done.
Work was submitted on time.
Right. And that work has some thought behind it, but you couldn't say that it exceeds expectations in any way.
No.
So it's
unless
like
you have very low expectations,
it's a C. You know, it's a piece sort of with a story, but there's clear revision needed in that story. The rhyme is forced at best, which gives it weak word choice, but there's something there that's put together, you know.
Windows down, radio up.
Hell no.
No, not even when driving
off.
Not even when driving to the New York City beaches.
No, I never go to the New York City beaches anyway. I wouldn't be in that situation.
No, I agree. Turn this radio down all the way as soon as this song comes on. Every time I turn around.
All right.
right. And with that, I want to say thank you once again for listening. If you want to reach out to us, our email address is decompositionpod@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter @decomp_pod, Facebook and Instagram, Decomposition Podcast. Get onto Apple Podcasts, iTunes, whatever you want to call it. Drop us a rating or a review. We love to hear what you guys think, good, bad, or otherwise.
Let's get real here for a second.
Let's get real.
People, we love you. And we think you are great.
Yeah.
And if there were a place to review you, we'd give you at least 3 stars.
At least 3. At least 7 stars.
We'd give you all the stars.
We're only asking for 5.
In the world. We're only asking for 3. Could some of you please, seriously, take like the 2 seconds out of your day? Just go into iTunes.
Yeah, we haven't had a review in months.
Give us a little review. We know some of you are listening. We hear from you through email.
This outro is going to outlast the song.
From you on Twitter and Instagram and all those good things. So just a little review, please.
If you like this podcast, please tell your friends, tell your enemies, let them know. In the meantime, we have nothing further to say. And so you guys just chill till the next episode. Joe Shipley.